You are listening to a Pleasure Podcast. For more from our Sex Podcast Collective, visit pleasurepodcasts.com.
Welcome back to Private Parts Unknown, a podcast about love and sexuality around the world. I'm Courtney Kosak, and today I have a couple of very sweet guests for you.
Hi, my name is L'Oreal Noel, and I am one of the producers of The Sweet Spot.
Hey, my name is Ainsley Burrows. I'm the founder and one of the producers of The Sweet Spot.
That is right. We are going to talk to L'Oreal and Ainsley all about the Sweet Spot Burlesque, which is an all-black, nationally touring company that performs burlesque shows in an artistic light while redefining the landscape of burlesque entertainment. They put on a wild, crazy, sexy, cool show. It is just a romp of a variety show, and they have the stories to match. They are going to tell us all about what goes on at The Sweet Spot, including one very, very funny story. And they are also going to tell us all about their journey to winding up together, both personally and professionally. It was just so fun to talk to them. So I'm very excited to introduce you to L'Oreal and Ainsley of The Sweet Spot.
I want to start all the way back at the beginning for the listeners and get the origin story, how you came up with this concept, how it got popping off.
So in 2003, I was going to Switzerland to record a poetry album. Of course, at that time, I used to be a full-time poet. I used to travel in England, Germany, Wales, Switzerland, Denmark, just on the road traveling. And I met this producer in Switzerland, and I was going to go make the album. And it was in March. And if you remember, that was when the war in Iraq was about to start.
Oh, yeah.
And I was, a lot of my poems are very political. So I'm on the way to go record an album. And I just got this feeling like it doesn't make any sense doing anything political. Like, I just been to the rally in New York in February. I think there was a huge rally in New York. So I just went to Switzerland and I was like, I told the producer, I just want to make poems about love, erotica, and sensuality. That's what I want to do right now. And he's like, that changes a lot of stuff, but let's do it. Because we had a completely different album that we was going to make. And he's like, he found a bunch of music, gave it to me, and we recorded this album that was all erotica, right? Came back to New York, put out the album, and a lot of the poets that I knew, when they heard it, they kind of felt like I sold out, like I wasn't, you know, doing political stuff, and now is the time to do political stuff. And in my mind, I thought that to be making poems about love and erotica right now is a political stance to make, right?
Ainsley's being soft. They were calling him a pussy poet.
Oh.
In the poetry community, that's like the worst thing you could ever be. That's like, oh, you're making poems about pussy now, huh? That's like the whole thing. And I was just like, no, like, can't you see the connection between, right? So that's how the original foundation started. So I was like, I'm going to do an event that's all about love, sex, erotica, sensuality, sexuality, everything. That's what I want to do. Just as a way to be like, we have to make space for this. It can't be like a thing where that's not a thing in our community. So,
I mean, it goes back to the cliche, what the world needs now is love.
But that was kind of the
essence of the idea, right? It's like there's so much turmoil going on at that time. Yeah. And you're like, you know what? I want to re-inject love into this space. Yes.
So the first show was in 2006 at the New Eureka Poets Cafe.
How was it received?
Oh, like, sold out show. Because I used to produce shows all the time. It was the biggest event I did. Like, there's probably twice the amount of people show up. And that was in 2006. I did, it was just one show. I did a second show, 2007. Same thing happened. 2008, I did another show. And then 2009.
Sabrina
Gilbert, my partner at the time, was like, since it's so successful, why don't you do it more often? Because people constantly ask about it. And I'm like, oh, That's, I never thought about doing it more often because it was just like you only did erotica show in February.
In Valentine's Day.
That was the only time you could do it because it didn't make any sense any other time. And she's like, you could do it anytime. And I was like, oh, wow, that is true. So we started doing it quarterly. It got so successful in New York that people were coming from California, from Florida, from Atlanta, different places to see the show in New York. So then we started doing it in other cities.
Amazing. And now you've been doing it 17 years.
Yes.
Is that right? And you're in 25 or something like that cities?
So pre-pandemic, we were in 25 cities that we did every quarter. Except in the summertime, we drop off some cities because they don't have the bandwidth to do a show in the summertime. But another part of the show is that in 2012, when L'Oreal came on board, we were in 5 cities. And my goal, my personal goal is like, can we get a sweet spot to 10 cities? We'll be good. And then me and L'Oreal spoke about, you know, the direction she wanted to take the show in. And she's like, what about 45 cities? And I never thought beyond 10 cities. And I was like, oh, we could, let's do it. So at one point, by this point, we've been in at least 41 cities. But the most cities we were up and running at one time was like 30, 32 cities. Mm-hmm. But pre-pandemic, we were at 25.
Right every now, 3 months.
Every 3 months. And right now we are in...
About 8 or 9?
Yeah, about eight cities right now.
Pandemic made those live events really hard.
Oh, they destroyed everything.
Yeah. Shut down.
We even tried to do it on Instagram.
Yes.
We did it for probably like 2 months.
We did 10 shows, 10 on,
shows
Instagram,
on Instagram.
And they were very successful. They're actually very good.
Yeah.
But
it wasn't the same.
It was toiling. Yeah. It was difficult. Because it was like getting all this energy, like we're at the show, but we're staring at a screen on its phone. It's small. And it was just...
I know. I did some comedy via Zoom and I was like, oh, this is terrible.
It's still different without feedback. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So tell us, describe like a show. What does a regular show feel like? What kind of acts are you doing? Because I've never heard of burlesque with poetry before. And so give us the vibe. What's going on at the shows?
Okay, so burlesque in general, you know, it grew out of traveling shows and things like that. But when it first came to the U.S., it was a variety show. And it included striptease dance. So we've kind of brought it back to that. So that's why we have, and our show specifically is about sensuality. And so we have erotic poetry. I do an erotic reading. We
music.
Have other people do erotic readings. We have
BDSM
music,
demos.
Sexual comedy, BDSM demos.
We have rope demos. Then we have games that the audience play. Like we have ear sex contests. We have scavenger hunts for different pieces of clothing. And the whole vibe is very joyful and festive, but it's still erotic. So like you walk into the show and it's like you're walking into this secret world. And you walk in and on stage is somebody doing a rope demo on stage. It'll be sometimes it's 2 people, sometimes it's 3. And the audience just walks in and it's like, oh, wow. And you sit down, you have this, you can watch it, have a drink, hang out with your partner. And then.
Yeah. And we really concentrate on the immersiveness of this show.
Mm-hmm.
So the moment that you're walking in, you're interacting with the cast members. You might not even know that you're interacting with them. And also the cast members are the ones who take you to your seats.
Yeah.
So from the very beginning, there's a blurring of the lines between the audience and the cast. And so even when we're performing on stage, the fourth wall is pretty much broken. We're like, we're constantly interacting. So it's a lot of high energy, a lot of fun.
And also in our shows, a lot of times when we go to shows, like burlesque shows, a lot of times a burlesque show is more, it's a show and you're there for the diva on stage. For us, it's the other way around. Like we're there for the audience members. So like you'll probably be seated by a person and they might sit beside you and they're hanging out. And the next moment, you know, they're on stage performing.
Mm-hmm.
So it creates a different experience than you just seeing somebody on stage. It's very like, what's it, innuendo lace and suggestive and stuff like that.
Uh-huh.
Because we have a host that hosts the show. All the music is centered around the theme of the show. It's just a fun time.
Yeah, it sounds fun as hell. And I love how, you know, instead of worshiping the performer, you're like reminded of your own sexuality and like brought into the experience in that way. Yes. That's great.
And also the audience members are able to participate in the show. So there are a lot of things where people come on stage or they have to do stuff in the show. Sometimes we have entire shows that's like, it's a sing-along show. Mm-hmm. So in between the performances, the whole audience is singing to songs that we pre-decide.
And we have like even a mini party.
And we call it micro parties in between each performer. So the DJ will play a song and the whole audience will start laughing or dancing, or sometimes do like
in their dances. Seats. There's not even that much space in between the rows, yes. But they find a way.
And we'll do like couples dances. Or we'll go for the Guinness book for the most lap dances in a room and everybody give everybody a lap dance with consent, of course. Yes. So it's all fun and it's just good American fun.
Yeah.
Hey, privates. Pew, pew. Privates with penises. I'm talking to you. Our sponsor, Fleshlight, can help you reach new heights with your self-pleasure. And that is because Fleshlight is the number one selling male sex toy in the world. And they don't just leave you hanging over there. At Fleshlight, you can explore sex toys with expert guides and advice, especially if you're a beginner or you're looking to level up. If you have been listening to this show for a while, you know how I feel about self-pleasure, and it is very, very good. And I definitely endorse using sex toys. I have a lot of fun with sex toys myself. So with the Fleshlight Girls series, you can embrace your wildest porn star fantasies with a different porn actress every night. What? With the variety of models, sensations, and intensities, you can live out limitless fantasies. And you can automate your fantasies with the universal launch that fits most Fleshlight products. With its innovative touch control system, just set the controls, sit back, and enjoy. And you have pleasure right in your hands. Your pleasure is in your complete control. And as the ultimate male pleasure device on the market, it's as versatile as you are. Anatomical, stamina building, vibrating, or made for couples, you name it. You define your luxury moment. And I just want to say, if you have any shame around sex toys, please don't. It is so much better than being weird with girls because you feel kind of desperate or whatever. Fleshlight just allows you to chill out, wait for the right girl when she comes, and in the meantime, you know you are going to be getting yours and having a good time. So you don't even have to sweat it. And right now, Fleshlight is offering Private Parts Unknown listeners 10% off your order with our code PRIVATE10. So you just go to ppupod.com. That's the website, ppupod.com. You click Fleshlight and you use the promo code PRIVATE10 to get 10% off your delicious new device. Again, that is ppupod.com and enter code PRIVATE10. And it really helps support the show. It helps support yourself and your own sex drive. So go ahead and use the link in the episode description. We can all be horny together. We can keep this podcast going. So get yourself a Fleshlight and get yourself off. So what's the craziest thing that's ever happened at the Sweet Spot? You got any crazy stories? Yeah.
Well, it's funny because...
Fresno?
Oh, I was going to talk about Baltimore here in Baltimore. Yeah, right. So it was here at the Baltimore soundstage and the theme of the show was Mardi Gras edition. And so at the top of the show, you know, one of our games is that we throw beats in the Mardi Gras tradition. And we say to the audience, you know, earn these beats. And we encourage, we tell the men too, like, you can earn these beats too. Like
in the tradition of Mardi Gras.
Yes. Let's get taco meat, whatever. Yeah. Like,
show some chance, you get some beats.
So the audience was really hyped, like, we have music playing. And this one person got pretty carried away. He stood up on his chair and proceeded to, I don't know what order things happened in, but all I know is that suddenly he was doing like flap, 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 flap.
He's doing a helicopter.
The helicopter.
And the audience starts cheering.
Security comes running and they're like, you got to get down.
You got to get down.
Everybody's like, oh.
And we don't encourage people to do this stuff. This has happened in a moment, right?
Right.
So the security's like,
So security comes him outside,
and the audience starts going,
bring him back,
bring him back.
Because the audience recognized that it was just someone who got carried away with fun, and that didn't mean anything. So we're standing on stage. The audience is, the security is halfway out the door with him.
And they look on the stage. I'm on the stage. It goes, what should we do? And I was like, let him stay. And the whole audience goes, yeah.
Oh my God, I love that. Yeah. You know, it is like we are in a more consent-based culture, and that's great in a lot of ways. But like there has to be, I don't know, a little bit of an understanding for the kind of natural things that happen like that, you know?
Right. And also a way to control it, right? Yeah. You know, the security did the right thing. And they looked they looked to us on stage to say,
and
okay, what's
that? The audience is like...
Yeah. And also we know that with all these years of experience, we have a certain kind of control over the audience. Yeah. Even though things happen in the moment, we know how to refocus it right away and bring it back. So we knew that it was okay to bring him back and that everything would go on well, which it did.
Yeah, especially the space that we're in, we also always try to approach everything with grace. Like, he just got carried away and he didn't mean to hurt anybody. He didn't mean to damage anybody. But at least in the moment, he realized, oh, this is not, I could go far, but not that far. And everybody was, and all the people there were like, yeah, bring him back. Like, don't put him there. So it was like a good lesson for us, for him and for everybody. Like, you know, so it was fun.
Yeah.
I love that. That is so funny. So explain, like, what's your troupe? How many people do you have involved? How do you cast? Where do you find your folks?
Oh, that's a great question. A lot of the cast members, we have about, it varies, so I
don't remember,
but we have between 10 and 12, and that includes supporting folks as well. A lot of the cast members have been with us for years.
For example, we had a body paint model who she started out with us. We do live painting on stage sometimes. She started out with a body paint model in like 2013 around there. Mm-hmm. And in 2016,
I can't say the year exactly, but
she became
a
burlesque dancer. But like, she did body painting with us for years. She always, from the beginning, was like, I want to be a dancer. And over time, she, you know, got to a point in her life where she's able to become a full-time dancer.
Mm-hmm.
And she transitioned, she's a dancer. We've had Panthers, which are like male stagehands who like pick up the clothes of the performers, who transition into becoming performers on stage. So we always have people that they say it's better to hire for attitude, because the craft or the skill itself, people could learn. But if you have people understand the type of work we're doing, understand the type of spaces we're occupied, understand the vision of the country, they could always learn the skill itself. So,
and you guys must be tight then, if you've been working together for that many years.
Yes, and actually at a certain point, most of us lived in the same building.
Oh,
yeah, before the pandemic.
And then some of us lived in one building and the other people live next door, and they'll come downstairs and we will rehearse together.
And you can imagine that over 17 years, over that amount of time, the show evolves a lot.
Yeah.
And we produce, Ainsley and I, you know, work on the production, but we take a lot of input from the performers. And so when we lived in the same building, that's when we probably had our most like exciting, like different things that we would try. And that's when we came up with the Sweet Spot Pledge, you know.
So like, you come to the show, also this week, forgot. Everybody in the audience has to take a pledge. Like a pledge to, I promise to keep my mind open, my heart open, my legs open,
and
keep my mouth open and
receive all the
blessings of the Sweet Spot Nation. And it's kind of like a contract that we make with the audience, and people just lean into, you know, like, because it's sometimes a very difficult space for people to exist in when it's just strangers. So it's like, we're talking about erotica, we're talking about sex, we're talking about sensuality, we're talking about sexuality. So it's so sometimes once you get that out of the way, everybody's like, oh yeah,
I can relax.
I love that. That's great. So how did you guys meet?
Oh.
I always love answering this question because we met at a hotel club, and the hotel was Trump Soho in New York City.
Oh, really?
Yes. And it was their nightclub, and it was like 2 o'clock in the morning. It was in 2010.
November 10th, 2010.
And nice. I was in the club. My girlfriends had left, and I was like, whatever, I'm dancing. And he came in with his friends. He approached me. I looked like somebody he knew, but of course, at the time, I was like,
She's like, does that ever work for you? I thought you were a friend of mine. She's like, oh, does that ever work for you? I'm like, I swear you look exactly like a friend of mine.
I met that person 2 days later, and I did look exactly like her. Like, her sister-in-law thought I was her. It was the strangest thing.
Her sister-in-law L'Oreal was her. So, is that real?
Was it right away? Did you have a connection and get together, or it took a while?
Matter of fact, that night it was me, L'Oreal, a friend of mine, and another young lady, and this other friend of ours. And he, I think, L'Oreal denies it, was interested in L'Oreal also. So we're five of us are sitting at the table. So as a way to get the other guy to like back off of L'Oreal, I told L'Oreal to tell my other friend that me and her was gonna get married.
So then I say to his friend, I was like, oh, Ainsley and I are going to get married. And that was the first night we met. Yeah. And we were kind of like inseparable. We didn't really spend much time apart after that first night.
Yeah.
You've been working on making that true ever since.
Yeah. And we got married when? We got married 6 years ago. Yeah.
Oh, congratulations.
Thank you.
Nice. I didn't know, you know, when you don't change your last name, it's not obvious.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Exactly right. And we don't wear rings either. So, it's not obvious.
Some things we think, we don't like jewelry because it's kind of like...
We both get annoyed with jewelry. It's interesting that both of us have that feeling, like wearing jewelry just annoys us.
Yeah.
Well, whatever works for you. Yeah, my dad's never worn his ring and they're great.
Yeah.
So what's it like, you know, did you start working together right away? And what's that like? It seems like you work very well together, but that can be a huge issue in romantic relationships. So how do you make that part work?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I think that part of what makes it work is that was part of the initial attraction, I have to say, is we, you know, we're talking, I don't want to say business, but just about our livelihoods, and we worked for ourselves. And so that's something that just we're very passionate about is, you know, working for ourselves and this kind of work. And so we connected on that very quickly. And at the time I was doing real estate and I love business development. And so Ainsley and I would have conversations all the time about his business. And then I was like, you know what? Finally, I was like, I want to join the company. And he was like,
"So
you get to be COO right now." And
so basically, in the original part, whenever we had a show, L'Oreal would come to the show and I'd be like, okay, the debriefing would be like, what worked? What didn't work? What should we change? Da, 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 da. So like she was intricately a part of everything that happened in the show.
Even before joining.
So we were like together for 2 years before. She was like, okay, so listen. Look, she sat me down. She's like, I want to have a meeting with you. I'm like, a meeting? I thought we were fine. She just sat down and she made a whole presentation about the direction she think the company should go and how she could get involved and what she would do and everything. I was like, oh, let's go. You're in charge.
And we actually work really well together. I think because our talents really, really fit well together. So we both have business mind and we both have the creative mind. And so, for example, when we're building something as simple as building an asset or a flyer or a postcard or something on Canva, I will begin it. He'll take it over, then he'll pass it back to me, then I'll pass it back to him, and then it'll come back to me for final. And a lot of things in general, we can do that way. We can pass back and forth. Yeah, it just fits.
So we trust each other creatively.
Yes.
And in business.
That's a good point.
So like if I wrote a letter, I could easily just hand it to L'Oreal, and if she has to change it and send it off, I'll be 100% sure that it would be perfect. You know, so
Yeah.
That's a good match.
Yeah.
So, Ainsley, you're originally from Jamaica, is that right?
Yes, I was born in Jamaica, moved to Brooklyn as a...
And did you know of burlesque in Jamaica? Is there a scene there?
No, I had no idea what burlesque was. Actually, the original Sweet Spot shows, we didn't have a burlesque dancer, but we were doing a variety show. We were doing poetry, live music, live painting, and I'd always get a dancer. But I'd go to the dancer and say, okay, you do modern dance or you do jazz. How can we make the dance that you're doing sexy or erotic?
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. And that's how it started out. Like, we always had a dancer. And then one day I was at the Brooklyn Moon and I met this burlesque dancer.
That's reveal?
No, it was a Chicago.
Oh, Chicago.
A Chicago honey child. She is like one of the people founded Brown Girls Burlesque. And she was like, yeah, I'm a dancer. I do burlesque. And I was like, I do a show called The Sweet Spot. It's all erotic and blah, blah, blah. She's like, oh, I should perform for your show. And that's the first time I was like, oh, a burlesque dancer, somebody whose entire dance thing is already mm-hmm. about erotica, sensuality. So I was like, perfect match. And she was the first burlesque dancer we had. And from there, we met other burlesque dancers, Essence Reveal, then Essence introduced us to Apathy, Angel, Poison Ivory. Like, a lot of people were on the scene in New York in the early 2010s. And then that became like a whole part of what we did until we started doing the show. The show was still just a kind of, what we call it, a pop erotica show. It's like popular erotica, uh-huh. whether it's comedy, poetry, music, whatever. That was a kind of thing that we were trying to lean into. But then we realized, like, let me do the research on burlesque. And we found out the history of burlesque and where it came from and how it evolved away from burlesque, because originally it was variety, but as culture goes, it's like, oh, I think people just want to see the striptease. And they got rid of everything.
That's how it became that way.
Yeah.
Where did it start? I guess I don't even know the whole story.
So burlesque was kind of like these traveling troupes in Europe, like in Italy, or just traveling throughout Europe. And it was more about parody mm-hmm. and comedy, mm-hmm. more than just about
striptease
and entertainment. And when it came to the U.S., it was like these variety shows that people use as a way to entertain people, to keep them in bars. And then during Prohibition, mm-hmm. it became like this underground thing that was like very like the attraction. To also uh-huh. get people to stay in bars, right? And when Prohibition uh-huh. ended, a lot of the people who were doing burlesque didn't have to be in bars to sell alcohol anymore, because you could sell it, you know, whatever. And a lot of the people from the burlesque scene became the first strippers. So it's just as a whole history that those things are connected. And right now, a lot of people who are strippers are using those skills that translate back into burlesque. A lot of burlesque people are going into strip clubs to learn some of those skills of like just confidence to now present that on stage as a burlesque dancer.
Yeah. I know a few people, like I'm thinking of a few in specific in LA that do both, and they're like also performance artists.
Yes.
And but yet they strip, they do burlesque, and it's like, you know, the skills feed off each other.
Yes.
Definitely.
So I'm such an exhibitionist, so doing burlesque sounds like a dream to me. What kind of expression and empowerment do you guys and the rest of the troupe get from this kind of performance and taking your clothes off and being vulnerable on stage? What does it give back to you?
Give back to us? Well, I can say very specifically what it gives to the audience, because we've heard a lot of commentary from friends and women that we didn't know. Also in the audience, we sat down with this woman for 2 hours once, and she was just gushing about how watching the burlesque dancer on stage remove her clothes sort of like gave her so much more confidence in her sex life and made her want to try new things. And just for her seeing this woman looking larger than life and being so confident in just being vulnerable made her rethink her entire, you know, sexual activity where she was like, I've been holding myself back. And we hear that, we hear that on a regular basis. So I know, so for sure, those things have to happen for the dancer first. And then they push it out and that energy actually infuses into the audience.
And we've had people like that's been to the show or people that want to come. I had this friend and she is, I met her in the street when we was in Brooklyn and I was like, oh, you should come to the show. She's like, oh, I don't know if I want to come because my husband wouldn't want to come with me. I was like, so here goes what you do. Just get the two tickets and take him. Don't tell him where you're taking him to. Just take him with you. She came to the show, didn't see her for like 2 months, ran to her in the street again. She's like, oh my God, thank you so much. Like, me and my husband had two kids. We were walking past each other in the house. It was just like a routine thing. And she says, since the sweet spot, we haven't been able to keep our hands off each other. So sometimes
that's so great.
So sometimes you just need that permission to re-engage with your sex life or your sexuality or your sensuality. And sometimes seeing somebody in that space encourages you also.
Oh, that's beautiful. So I guess kind of as a final tip or advice to just people listening at home, for non-burlesque performers, how can they practice this art of seduction at home and trying to seduce their partners? Of course, they should go to the sweet spot if they can. But is there anything that you think, you know, you've learned from doing this that people can just kind of apply today?
That's very interesting. Well, I'll give a small tip, but you might know more. You've been a performer way much longer. But one of the things that I think is important is looking at yourself in the mirror when you're practicing something. So before you know, I'm going to go do something with my partner and you want to do a little practice for yourself, make sure you do it in front of a mirror and make sure you look at your facial expressions and make sure that you're affirming yourself while doing these things. Like, I look beautiful. I look sexy. He's going to love this. She's going to love this. They're going to love this. Like, this is going to turn them on. It's going to, you know, affirming yourself and really sort of just like getting in that communion with yourself in the mirror.
From my side, I think the easiest path towards like that connection or to reignite the sensuality or sexuality is through the mind. And the easiest way is through reading to your partner. Just be like, hey, I got this book of erotic poems. I'd love to read some for you, or I'd love to read one thing for you, or I'd love to read this chapter from this book for you. And it'd be a simple thing. But because it's just a sound that goes in the person's mind, now they invent the reality in their minds. And then y'all have this thing that's shared. And, you know, it helps to start the conversation around what's next.
Yeah, definitely.
Start the spark again. And I'm sure some of it too is like, you're just reminded like, oh, this is a playful thing.
Yes.
Like it's a dance, you know, that we do.
Yeah. Also, don't take sex and sexuality too serious. Just enjoy it. It's meant to be enjoyed. It's literally probably the most enjoyable thing we'll do as human beings. But people take it so serious and then it's like, it loses its currency. Just enjoy it. Be playful, you know, like makeup games, you know.
I love this. Thank you so much for joining me. Give a plug for The Sweet Spot, where people can find you online.
So the show is called The Sweet Spot, but online our website is Sweet Spot Nation. On IG, and we just started a TikTok page, Sweet Spot Nation. And Cash App, okay.
Cash App is Sweet Spot Nation if you want to donate.
Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much to L'Oreal and Ainsley. They are the sweetest. That was so much fun. And make sure to check out their website, sweetspotnation.com, to find out when they'll be coming to a town near you. I know they have shows coming up in Washington, D.C. and New York City. But no matter where you are, get on that email list so you stay up to date on the latest and you can go check them out. I can't wait until they come to LA. I am going to be in the front row. Thank you so much for tuning in to this episode of Private Parts Unknown. Stay tuned right here. I have got another sexy episode coming your way next week. And to stay in touch between episodes, follow me at Courtney Kosak. That is K-O-C-A-K on Twitter and Instagram. And follow the show at Private Parts Unknown on Instagram and at Private Parts Un on Twitter. And hey, baby, I am shamelessly trying to hit the top 1% on OnlyFans always and forever. So if you are interested in a Playboy style peek behind the podcast, you can subscribe to my OnlyFans account. It is onlyfans.com/CocoPeepShow. Again, onlyfans.com/CocoPeepShow. It is a very horny and fun way to support the show. And of course, subscribe to our newsletter on Substack. It is privatepartsunknown.substack.com. There is a link for that in the episode description. And the Private Parts Unknown YouTube channel is back up and running, baby. And there are new videos with Gigi Engel, Dr. Amir Murashi, Malte Amory, Lola Jean, Samaya Burton, and so much more. So check it out. It is youtube.com/privatepartsunknown. Again, youtube.com/privatepartsunknown. And make sure you subscribe. And shout out to Amy Rausch for the bomb-ass theme music. For more info about Amy and her music, check out amyrausch.com. That's Amy, RAASCH.com. This episode was mixed by my ride or die audio guy, Michael Castaneda of Plastic Audio. And after enjoying this content, could we ask you for a quick favor? Just go to ratethispodcast.com/private and give us a 5-star rating and review. We currently have some rating goals. We are trying to get to 300 ratings on Apple Podcasts, and we are currently at 275. So we need 25 more ratings to get to 300. I would love to do that before the new year. So if you are listening on Apple Podcasts, please give us a 5-star rating and review. Just a couple sweet nothings with what you love about the show. And if you're listening on Spotify, go up to the upper left-hand corner of our page, click the star button, and then click all 5 stars. On Spotify, we are trying to get to 125 ratings, and we are at 123. So we just need 2 more. So if you are listening on Spotify, please go to the upper left-hand corner of our page, click the star button, and then click all 5 stars. And make sure you are subscribed while you're there. There's like a bell button and a follow button you can hit. And on most apps, it's like a follow or a subscribe button, but then you'll get notified of our latest episodes. I love to do that with all of my favorite regular podcast listens. It's a really great way to get the latest. And you can help us out with ratings and reviews no matter where you are listening. You just go to ratethispodcast.com/private and give us a 5-star rating and review. And there is one more way you can help support the show. We are now on the Fountain app. So if you are listening on a V4V platform and you get value from this show, you can support us by sending a boostagram. You can even send a comment along with your boost. And I have to say, those are my favorite messages to get because they come with a little bit of money. Thank you so much for sticking with me until the end. Until next time, stay curious and keep exploring. Love you, privates.